Chapter 6. Ender's Shadow.
Normally, your reports on a launch group are brief. A few troublemakers, an incident report, or, best of all, nothing.
You're free to disregard any portion of my report, sir.
Sir? My, but aren't we the prickly martinet today?
What part of my report did you think was excessive?
I think this report is a love song.
I realize that it might seem like sucking up to use with every launch the technique you used with Ender Wiggin.
You use it with every launch?
As you noticed yourself, sir, it has interesting results. It causes an immediate sorting out.
A sorting out into categories that might not otherwise exist. Nevertheless, I accept the compliment implied by your action. But 7 pages about Bean? Really? Did you actually learn that much from a response that was primarily silent compliance?
That is just my point, sir. It was not compliance at all. I was performing the experiment, but it felt as though his were the big eye looking down the microscope, and I were the specimen on the slide.
So he unnerved you?
He would unnerve anyone. He's cold, sir. And yet
hot. Yes, I read your report. Every scintillating page of it.
Yes, sir.
I think you know that it is considered good advice for us not to get crushes on our students.
Sir?
In this case, however, I am delighted that you are so interested in Bean. Because, you see, I am not. I already have the boy I think gives us our best chance. Yet there is considerable pressure because of Bean's damnable faked-up test scores to give him special attention. Very well. He shall have it, and you shall give it to him.
But, sir...
Perhaps you are unable to distinguish an order from an invitation.
I'm only concerned that I think he already has a low opinion of me.
Good. Then he'll underestimate you. Unless you think his low opinion might be correct.
Compared to him, sir, we might all be a little dim.
Close attention is your assignment. Try not to worship him.
All that Bean had on his mind was survival that first day in battle school. No one would help him. That had been made clear by Dymac's little charade in the shuttle. They were setting him up to be surrounded by... what? Rivals at best, enemies at worst. So it was the street again. Well, that was fine. Bean had survived on the street. And would have kept on surviving, even if Sister Carlotta hadn't found him. Even Pablo. Bean might have made it even without Pablo the janitor finding him in the toilet of the clean place. So he watched. He listened. Everything the others learned, he had to learn just as well, maybe better. And on top of that, he had to learn what the others were oblivious to. The workings of the group, the systems of the battle school. How teachers got on with each other, where the power was, who was afraid of whom. Every group had its bosses, its suck-ups, its rebels, its sheep. Every group had its strong bonds and its weak ones, friendships and hypocrisies. Lies within lies within lies. And Bean had to find them all as quickly as possible in order to learn the spaces in which he could survive. They were taken to their barracks, given beds, lockers, little portable desks that were much more sophisticated than the one he had used when studying with Sister Carlotta. Some of the kids immediately began to play with them, trying to program them or exploring the games built into them, but Bean had no interest in that. The computer system of Battle School was not a person. Mastering it might be helpful in the long run, but for today it was irrelevant. What Bean needed to find out was all outside the launchy barracks. Which is where, soon enough, they went. They arrived in the morning, according to space time, which, to the annoyance of many in Europe and Asia, meant Florida time, since the earliest stations had been controlled from there. For the kids, having launched from Europe, it was late afternoon, and that meant they would have a serious time lag problem. Dymac explained that the cure for this was to get vigorous physical exercise and then take a short nap. No more than 3 hours in the early afternoon, following which they would again have plenty of physical exercise so they could fall asleep that night at the regular bedtime for students. They piled out to form a line in the corridor. Green, brown, green, said Dymac, and showed them how those lines on the corridor walls would always lead them back to their barracks. Bean found himself jostled out of line several times and ended up right at the back. He didn't care. Mere jostling drew no blood and left no bruise, and last in line was the best place from which to observe. Other kids passed them in the corridor, sometimes individuals, sometimes pairs or trios, most with brightly colored uniforms in many different designs. Once they passed an entire group dressed alike and wearing helmets and carrying extravagant sidearms, jogging along with an intensity of purpose that Bean found intriguing. They're a crew, he thought, and they're heading off for a fight. They weren't too intense to notice the new kids walking along the corridor, looking up at them in awe. Immediately there were catcalls. Launches! Fresh meat! Who make cocoa in the hall and don't clean it up? They even smell stupid. But it was all harmless banter, older kids asserting their supremacy. It meant nothing more than that. No real hostility. In fact, it was almost affectionate. They remembered being launchies themselves. Some of the launchies ahead of Bean in line were resentful and called back some vague, pathetic insults, which only caused more hooting and derision from the older kids. Bean had seen older, bigger kids who hated younger ones because they were competition for food and drove them away, not caring if they caused the little ones to die. He had felt real blows, meant to hurt. He had seen cruelty, exploitation, molestation, murder. These other kids didn't know love when they saw it. What Bean wanted to know was how that crew was organized, who led it, how he was chosen, what the crew was for. The fact that they had their own uniform meant that it had official status. So that meant that the adults were ultimately in control. The opposite of the way crews were organized in Rotterdam, where adults tried to break them up, where newspapers wrote about them as criminal conspiracies instead of pathetic little leagues for survival. That really was the key. Everything the children did here was shaped by adults. In Rotterdam, the adults were either hostile, unconcerned, or, like Helga with her charity kitchen, ultimately powerless. So the children could shape their own society without interference. Everything was based on survival, on getting enough food without getting killed or injured or sick. Here there were cooks and doctors, clothing and beds. Power wasn't about access to food. It was about getting the approval of adults. That's what those uniforms meant. Adults chose them, and children wore them because adults somehow made it worth their while. So the key to everything was understanding the teachers.